You know, there's a couple things with us. One, we've got the best winning percentage in the DMV over the last 4 years.
Talk that talk.
Mean, yeah, that's those are facts. I think the hardest thing for us is, you know, I don't judge anyone on who they want to play, don't want to play. We'll play anybody in the DMV. We were 1-31. We would play everybody in the DMV. So, I can tell you right now, we've called every school in the DMV. The only one that'll play us next year, as of today, and maybe that changes, is we're going to play Loyola.
We are back. Another episode of Not Even D2. I'm your host, KJ Allison. Here, my boy, Neruda Perdomo. Fire episode for you guys today. My voice a little low today just because I'm feeling under the weather, but I want to talk some NBA, bro. Knicks up 3-1. Nobody expected that. I know you hype right now, so let's just talk
nobody,
about
nobody expected that for you except your boy, bro. What are you talking about?
You did not expect that. I'm not gonna say what you was texting me, but we'll just skip over that. How you feeling?
Nah, I feel great. Great. You know, the best feeling that I've enjoyed is just all these Celtics fans that was doing a lot of this. They was doing a lot of this before this series started.
They was like, I'm not worried about the Knicks. Yeah, we might sweep them.
All this stuff. And I sent a couple text messages last night. And, you know, I was getting pretty animated in a couple of them. You know what I'm saying? And let's just say it, you know, the tagline was, you quiet now. Because you quiet now. Y'all down 3-1. We came back 20 twice. So now all you Celtics fans know that no lead is safe around the Knicks at this point in the series. Number two, all these Celtics fans know that they have no answer for Jalen Brunson, like I told you in round one. Not Dennis Schroeder, not Al Horford, not any of these. He's the king of the fourth quarter. And now we have a chance to close it out in the Garden, or you know, we do it in six or seven, however it happens. But nah, it's definitely a great day to be a Knicks fan. Prayers up to Jason Tatum. You never want to see that type of stuff happen too.
Yo, I seen first time Knicks gonna be in the conference finals in 25 years, bro. That's you haven't seen nothing like that. So
nah,
it's a great time.
It's crazy. It's crazy to witness witness this, man. New York's on tilt. I'm in Boston right now, or near Boston right now. But I seen, you know, a couple of my boys from Utica went to the game, and it was a crazy environment. They were FaceTiming me. It looked awesome. So regardless, you know, the Knicks, you know, win the chip or not, they've definitely provided a lot of hope for a lot of New Yorkers right now, in a time where, you know, living in New York City, you could read about it, you know, how it's been kind of tough on some New Yorkers. So the fact that, you know, the Knicks are doing well and they're killing, you love seeing stuff like that.
No, facts. Bro, spinning back on a point about the leads. Pops, what's good?
Yes, he was working out a little bit.
My boy with the Kimball Union on too. But the leads, the Knicks going down 20, coming back, bro. That's something throughout the league. And it's like weird for people to get accustomed to it. But if you think about how the game is played, like, you get three stops in a row and all three possessions on offense, you hitting threes, is now right back to a good ass game. So it's no surprise when I'm watching, like, I'll go to the Thunder series, like game one, we was up 16. I'm like, yo, how we just blow a 16 point lead? But it's really not that crazy when teams are coming back. But real quick, I just wanted to say a lot of these, or especially the Timberwolves series, like, it's hard to judge like how these series would actually go if teams were at full strength. The Cavs down, DG, Mobley missed some time, DeAndre Hunter. But like I said in the past episode, like, the Pacers are tough, bro. And
yeah, you called it for sure.
Carlisle's doing his thing. Like, game three, they was messed up because of the zone. But like game four, you seen the adjustments, just moving it a little bit, setting odd angle screens. They able to get downhill and start spraying to shooters. The league is lit right now, but real quick, I just want to hear your finals predictions. Like, who you think is going to be in the getting out the West and out the East?
Knicks in the finals for sure.
For sure?
when it comes. Yeah, for sure. I think
it's gonna be a great series, bro. I'm looking forward to that.
OD, it's
crazy too. Like the Cavs won 60 plus games, and the Celtics were title favorite going into the season, and both of them about to be out before the conference finals. So that's crazy in the East.
Yeah, I saw a comment on YouTube the other day, the most unpredictable NBA playoffs we've ever seen, because it's true, right? It's true. Okay, for Knicks fans, I said the Knicks are going to win, but you know, when you're playing the defending champs, you know, you're like, okay, like there's a level of respect you do have no matter what. So, you know, I'm like, it's going to be tough for us, but you know, the Knicks pull it out. With the Pacers, you know, I don't like the Pacers. I think it's well documented. Just, you know, Knicks Pacers rivalry, you know, obviously no Knicks fan's going to be rooting for the Pacers, but you know, they're killing right now, right? Thunder were number one seed, but they're doing their thing and it's, you know, tied up right now. I really do think the Thunder probably pull it out though. I think they just have too much for Jokic.
Yeah, I agree, bro. I saw this TikTok Joker being guarded by Jalen Williams, for people that don't even know him, like third string center on the Thunder, but he's shooting like 16% on him and he's getting like really physical looks. So it's tough for Joker to kind of dominate. Bro, he's averaging like 6 turnovers a game this series. So I'm not trying to lead that into the MVP discussion, but I know Shea's not having his best, but 6 turnovers a game is kind of crazy. But we don't want to talk too much NBA. Yeah. Let's get to today's episode. We got Coach Pat Scarry, currently head coach at Towson University, just coming off a year, CAA Coach of the Year, which is big time for my guy. He's a Celtics fan too, so we definitely got to mention he's probably upset right now. But really good coach. I'm looking like fit when he came in, 15 straight losing seasons. You mentioned it in the episode, but that's insane because now 4 straight seasons of 20 plus wins. So the way that he's able to like just flip that program around has been pretty remarkable. But we talked about a lot in this episode, like a lot of good topics to get into with Coach Scarry. So I just want to hear your thoughts and opinions talking with our guy, Coach Scarry.
Definitely a great conversation. He was mad cool, bro, honestly. And you know, just to hear his journey, it's the biggest thing that, you know, you pointed out to me about his episode is what Coach Scarry said is about. It's like, it's not always about how you start with coaching, right? Like, it doesn't matter where you are, just, you know, work hard. And obviously that's probably not a sentiment that we haven't heard before, but you know, Coach Scarry's at Towson University, CAA, like, you know what I'm saying, good school. And he's sharing this piece of advice for us. So for me, it's, you know, it was really helpful, man. And it was a great episode. Like, just to hear his insight on like roster building, right? Because like you talked about, 15 straight losing seasons before he gets there. And then I think the last 3 to 4 years, they've won 20 games plus, which I think has never probably been done in Towson history. And they had the craziest season turnaround in like NCAA history. Yeah. One year turnaround, winning like 18 plus more games than they did before, something like that. So definitely a great episode, Coach Scarry. Just, you know, hearing a story coming from Division III to now, like you mentioned, kind of staying in Division I and how he, you know, ended up thriving in that level. And also just hearing his journey, obviously definitely a great conversation with Coach Scarry. Excited for the viewers to get to know him.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we talked about a lot with him, like, you know, how the NCAA, the tournament criteria, and Dan Gavitt, he kind of called Stray, like, if he's listening or gets a ear on this, we're kind of talking like he's not really doing the best with the tournament selection. It's kind of tough, and I wanted to talk about it a little bit, like, bro, it's no way to even the playing field. Like we were saying, mid-majors don't get as much love. Like you could have a 20-plus win season and still not get into the tournament. It's not your fault that you're playing a mid-major conference, but it's like, how are you gonna fault a SEC team for having a mid-year? But like they deserve to be in the tournament too because they're playing like Florida, Texas every night. So it's like, I don't know if you have any extended thoughts or like ideas on how to even it out, but I do think it's like it's in a good spot. So shout out to Dan Gavitt. He caught it straight, but I think there's no perfect way, but I think it, like where it is right now is pretty good.
Yeah. Look, at the end of the day, there's everyone's going to have an opinion, you know, about how, you know, whatever it is, you run a business, you know, NCAA college program, someone's going to have an opinion on how you should run it and how it should be different. But when it comes to the NCAA tournament, I can see Coach Scary's frustrations, right? Because like how a team like Texas, who I don't think they had, were they over 500 this year or just,
I think
just
they were right at 500, but they were 6-12 in conference.
Okay. So how a team that goes and look, SEC, great conference, and you got to play some of the top teams in the country. But let's counter that to a team like George Mason, right? That is a 20 plus one team, loses to VCU in the chip. And they have a couple high major guys on their team, like, and they don't, and they go, they make the NIT. Like there's obviously a problem with that. Like why is a team that's making the conference chip that has shown the capability to win games during the season, not making the big dance? Why is a team like that's going 6-12 in conference? Why are we rewarding that? You know what I'm saying? Because there's teams in the A-10 that had 20 plus wins that went six, that probably had like six wins in conference, but we're not rewarding them. But just because they're in the SEC, you reward a team like that. Like, I don't know if that makes sense. I don't know if I'm making sense, but.
Real quick, before you keep going, like, just to counter that, though, it's like, this is why scheduling is so important. And we were talking about this with Coach Scary, like, how he's trying to schedule some of the high majors, and they might be ducking him. But, like, a mid-major should try to schedule as many high major games as they can during the non-con. Because something that hurt George Mason is, I think they played four quad one teams and they lost all of them, maybe three, but they lost all of them. So it's like when you got your opportunity, you didn't really perform. So, 20 wins in the A-10 is cool, but it's like you when you were on that stage, when you're playing, they played Duke, they got clapped by Duke. It was a good game for a while, but I'm just saying like when you're on that platform, and this is why you should schedule a lot of games because national eyes are going to be on you. The committee's going to be watching those games. They don't really care about what you did in the A-10, you got to perform in the non-con games too. Mm-hmm.
Keep going. 100%. I mean, they definitely, you know, dropping four quad one games is not ideal for them, but I don't know, man. It's just, it's a tough world for the mid majors right now when it comes to just, you know, players getting coming from mid major, going to Division One, you know, and then not, and then, you know, the mid-major coaches not being able to keep a lot of their players around. But that, but then again, that's a conversation we have with Coach Scary just about how he's able to keep Taj. What was bro's name?
Taj Tejada. Yeah.
Keeping him, who's an NBA prospect, right, for another year. OD. So definitely a lot of problems with just, you know, the NCAA and, you know, picking the committee, picking the teams. But like you said, it's never going to be a perfect world for anyone. But yeah, definitely, you know, we don't want to give nobody astray.
Nah, real quick about Towson, like, yeah, I could see them honestly making a lot of noise this year. Like they kind of made some noise. They came up short in the CAA tournament, but they're bringing back two all-league performers, Tyler Tejada and Dylan Williamson. Both of them probably going to be in some mock drafts next year. But then, like, he when he's in the portal, Coach Scary, he's not looking for, like, oh, let me go see what Florida has to offer or something like that. He's looking – he was talking about, like, they're looking at block rate and block percentages. Like, a lot of coaches aren't doing that. He's doing studies throughout the offseason. So Coach Scary is a really good coach, and it's showing, like, four straight seasons, 20-plus wins. But we just talked about so much in this episode. It's definitely worth your while. Hope you enjoyed this episode, and let's hear from Coach Scary. All right, we are here with Coach Scary. How you doing today, Coach?
It's great to be here, guys.
Appreciate you getting on, Coach. Definitely excited for this conversation today.
So, Coach, we was talking a little bit off air. You said you got a little bit of workouts happening later. Just tell me what's on the agenda for today.
Yeah, we got weights, right, at 12:45 weights. And then skill work session on the court, you know, in the morning. We usually have our academic meeting and then really a staff meeting to kind of get caught up on some of the daily business of running a Division I basketball program.
I saw on the Towson Instagram that you're going to the NABC Champion Basketball Clinics in early May. Can you explain to the viewers a little bit about what that is and what you're going to be doing there?
Sure. The National Association of Basketball Coaches does a good job of putting on some clinics in the spring. Usually they do it for like four straight weekends. And when asked to participate, which I've been fortunate a couple of times to do that, like happy to do that. So, you know, it's just more of a learning weekend, right? You know, coaches will talk on different topics. It could be some stuff from, you know, summer game planning, practice planning, out of bounds play, special situations, whatever that may be. So I think it's important that you try not to turn down basketball opportunities when they're presented to you.
Yeah, I feel that. And you're probably getting a lot better as a coach too, being surrounded by a ton of different coaches. Like a lot of coaches talk about how some of their best stuff is not even their own ideas coming from other people.
Oh, there's no question. I don't think any of us are original, right? Everyone's taken from someone else and then trying to put your twist on it. You know, like I finally, you know, we finished our roster up last week. So over the weekend, I can tell you that I went through out of bounds plays from the top 20 most efficient teams in the country last year. And then there were four teams I wanted to kind of study some of their actions on offense. So we have a pretty good GA here named Nick Williams who put all that stuff together for me. And yeah, you gotta, right. There's always a better way to do it. And that's kind of the quest.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it's kind of interesting. Like I looked at you guys' Synergy and it has like on the Synergy basketball app, it has like your points per possession or something like that, whether it be after timeouts or side out of bounds or whatever. And you guys rank pretty high in the country and just like, converting those like after timeout plays or baseline out of bounds plays. So, but you're saying that you're looking at some of the other efficient teams in the country and trying to learn from them. So definitely respect that.
No, I appreciate it. 1,000%. There's always stuff like in staff meetings, you discuss a little bit of like, hey, they're doing this. So you know what I mean? And can we apply that to us or can we find out a little bit more about it? And then I think the other challenge always is, as a teacher is making sure you feel like you can teach it properly so that your guys can execute it. You know, I have a saying, telling isn't teaching, right? I stole that from I worked for a guy, Tom Herring at the College of Charleston a long time ago. He used to say that. So you're always trying to figure out how do these guys learn so that like we put them in positions to be successful.
Yeah. That's the second gem you gave me already. So I'm going to have to write. You said telling isn't teaching?
Yes, sir.
All right. We're going to talk about this, but you've been recruiting in the portal a little bit, but I'm curious with how hectic it is right now. Like, are coaches just in the portal website refreshing? Like, what are you waiting for guys to reach out to you? What's the mindset through coaches right now?
Yeah, I think overall, yes. We have tried to really recruit younger guys and also so we have some retention, but the roster management aspect, no matter how you're doing it, is taking up way too much time. But it's a new wave. Like I said, I finally just got into some X and O's, which is the latest I've ever really got into that. Wow. I have some peers, some terrific coaches I know that still have, you know, 3-4 scholarships. So I think sometimes it's hard to, till you know what your roster is going to look like. It's hard to talk about stuff you're going to add, subtract, right? Tweak sometimes.
Yeah. I've heard coaches even say like, it's hard to know what your next year staff is going to look like, stuff like that. You can't focus on anything besides what my roster is going to look like.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is you have to focus on other stuff. But this certainly makes it a lot more challenging because it's like it's the number one thing. So I'm thankful one that we've got a lot of guys coming back and that we were also intentional I think, in what we were able to quickly strike on in the portal, and for having a really good staff to do that. So selfishly, I hope now maybe we can get ahead with how we, train our guys and develop our guys and what we think we're going to try to do for next year.
I'm wondering, Coach, when we're having this transfer portal conversation, what are you kind of looking for in the transfer portal? Like, I've seen a lot of different coaches nowadays. They're maybe going in the Division II route, right? They're looking at some of the high-level Division II players or high-level JUCO Division I players, maybe some D3 All-Americans, maybe some of the, low-major Division I guys, right? Because Towson is a mid-major, right? So just what exactly are you really looking for in the transfer portal? Kind of walk us through it.
Yeah, I think, I don't think it's an exact science, right? For us, it's one you're trying to is there talent there, right? And what's the price tag on that talent as far as what you have to work with? And part of the talent piece is also we're excited about a big guy we had coming in, and we were really looking at block rate, rim efficiency, and offensive rebounding rate. And all our lists, that was like the first thing. And if it was 3 for 3 or 2 for 3, that, hey, let's dig in, let's watch a little film, let's make some calls. And then you're also trying to figure out, does he have representation? What's the range here? Do we think it's, you still got to find what you think is makes sense. I'm all for players to get paid, but I'm not for guys that, maybe if a guy didn't have a great year, whether it was here or somewhere else, asking for 2-3 times, I wouldn't pay 3 times for a house that I didn't think, had a leaky roof either. So, some of this stuff is, it's different. It's definitely different.
It's just super interesting, like how much coaches are having to battle right now. You got to focus on X and O's, salary, transfer portal. Like, there's so much that's going into being a head coach right now. But I want to talk a little about, the Towson program. You guys coming off a really good year, 22 wins, made it into the CAA semifinals. But I'm curious, what this next class is looking like. I know you brought in three transfers already, a few high school kids. So just talk a little about what you're bringing in and what you plan to build on.
Yeah, I mean, we plan on hope we can win another not only regular season championship, but which we've won 2 of the last 4 years, and take it further and win a conference championship. I think for us, the two big starting points is we bring back Dylan Williamson and Tyler Tejada, who are
super big.
Dylan was second team, but I thought he's a first team all conference point guard, best one in our league, and Tyler was named player of the year in the league. So for us, a lot of what we're building around is who can help us around those two guys' skill set. I mean, those aren't guys that I'm going to take off the court a lot, if at all. And I'm expecting I feel like we got the two best guys in the conference. Mm. So what we did do from there, though, we took a 7-1 kid, Morsec, which we haven't had a guy.
He's from Fresno, right?
Yep. We had a terrific couple of forwards in Caleb and Bayer and Abdu Sam. So we might be able to play those guys together. Gives us a little bit bigger look, especially because those other two guys' games are really developing. And then thought our staff did a great job. We found a guy, Jack Dumbia, who really plays any position on the court. Had a really good year at Wright State, in the Horizon Conference. He does a little bit of everything. And then we got another excellent scorer in Tyler Schmidt from Valpo out of the Valley, and can really shoot the ball. So I think his ability to put points on the board and space the court's going to really help us. So on both Dumbia and Schmidt, we got those guys pretty quickly. And we thought based on what we were losing, that those guys would step in right away. And, we've got some guys we redshirted that I'm expecting to help us with Coleman, Cole, and Chike Nadefo for sure. So those guys have been in the program for a year, and we think they're ready to make a big impact. And like I told you, we got three good high school guys, Jaquan Womack and John Barton and Brandon Holmes, all from great high school in the AU programs here in the talent-rich DMV.
Yeah. I mean, I want to circle back on something real quick. So you mentioned winning the regular season 2 out of 4 years, 2 out of the last 4 years, and you made the semifinals in the CAA 4 years in a row. But I'm just curious, like, what you're seeing or what you think you have to improve on, like, individually as a coach to, you know, kind of get over that hump and win the CAA for the first time.
Yeah, I've got it right. We just gotta, you know, I don't know if it's exactly one thing. You know, sometimes it's hard. You know, we didn't have a great game defensively in our semifinal loss. So certainly, you know, for instance, I'm picking on that. Should we have played more zone? Should we have changed ball screen coverage earlier? Should we have pressed more? You know, but there are some studies we're doing right now on internally on both sides of the ball that I don't know how much will change, but it forces us to think critically. You know, what I have probably the last 4 years, I don't think we change a lot. You know, the tournaments are different. The conference tournaments are different deal. You know, we were a little banged up late in the year this year. So you always question yourself, like, and you know, we practiced hard on like Monday, Tuesday, and then we tapered, we gave them off Wednesday. Then we started tapering down a little bit before, you know, before our tournament game. Should we have had more contact? But you're also worried you had a couple guys that are banged up that, you're hoping for three games in 3 days. That takes its toll on you too. But when I think the bigger question is when you don't win, right? Like at our level, we got to be the best team for 3-4 months. And then you got to throw that away and try to be the best team for 3-4 days, you know? But it is what it is, what you signed up for. So if you don't accomplish both those, to me, you better figure out how to be pretty critical.
Coach Koff. So I go to right now, Coach Gary, I go to Utica College. Mm-hmm. It's in upstate New York.
Sure.
I play basketball here, and Coach Coffey's the coach. And one thing that he always says, you know, before the start of playoffs, it's a new season, right? So it's a whole new season. The conference tournament time, it's anyone's game. You got to take everyone and respect them for who they are, and they're going to be trying to play. They're going to try and play their best at the right time as well, just like we are. So,
because Coach Gary, the 12 seed, made it to the finals this year, right?
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, Delaware is a good team. We beat them in 2 close games in the regular season. So, I mean, we knew it would be a hard game, you know, and we have great respect for Delaware. But by the same token, like, at the end of the day, they ended up losing 20 games. So even if they won the conference tournament, is that a great year? You know,
I mean, you make it to the big dance, I'd say, yeah, so.
Yeah, I would say it's a great week. 20 losses is still 20 losses.
That's true.
You know, so that's what's crazy about the game, right? It's not a series like an NBA. Like I said, we got to be the best team for 3-4 months, and then you got to throw that away and be the best team for 3-4 days. That's the challenge. Don't get me wrong. I would have been ecstatic if, you know, we lost 20 games and then won 5 games in 5 days. For a couple of weeks, then I would have flipped the page and I'd have been, we'd have made some changes because we're not paid to lose 20 games either.
100% right. I like that. 100% right. You you mentioned this comment about talent rich area in the DMV, and I want to talk a little bit more about this before we get into like the original set of questions that we had. But you know, both KJ and I know that the DMV got a lot of great hoopers. We've had a couple of different DMV hoopers on the podcast here, right? And we know about all the DMV, you know, NBA players that they have, right? I think they have, you know, I forget the name of the town that Kevin Durant, like Michael Beasley and all them are from in the DMV area. But like I'm saying, there's a wealth of talent in the area. And there's a lot of Division I teams too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because you have, you know, George Washington, Georgetown, Howard, American, U Maryland, you guys, Loyola University, Maryland, right? So a lot of schools in the DMV area. How does Towson stand out? And how do you want to stand out amongst, you know, the other Division I schools?
Yeah, I that's a great question. You know, first of all, we try to get as many DMV guys as we can. Now, everyone in the country knows about the DMV, so it's not like there are a lot of secrets, right? Everybody comes in here. You know, there's a couple of things. That's one, we've got the best winning percentage in the DMV over the last 4 years.
Talk that talk.
Mean, yeah, that's those are facts. I think the hardest thing for us is, you know, I don't judge anyone on who they want to play, don't want to play. We'll play anybody in the DMV. We were 1-31, we would play everybody in the DMV. So I can tell you right now, we've called every school in the DMV. The only one that'll play us next year as of today, and maybe that changes, is we're going to play Loyola in a game. So and there's a lot of good teams and really good coaches. We would like to play them all, but I don't know everybody's philosophy or everybody's scheduling needs, but certainly here at Towson, I think it makes sense for schools to try to play each other.
It's interesting because, like, you know, maybe part of those, the coaches on that side of it, you know, like you, Maryland, or like the quote unquote higher level schools, right? They might not want to play you guys because Towson, you know, 4 years in a row, 20 wins, like that's scary for another coach, right? They might want
to
play.
Like I said, it just depends on what that, you know, like we'd be happy to play. It just depends on what those guys' philosophy is. What I've learned is, you know, we're trying to play an aggressive schedule to get us ready for the CAA. And it's helped us, especially the last 4 years. We're 54-18 in CAA games, regular season games. It's the best winning percentage in our league, 75%. And it's 13th best in the country. Not a lot of people know that. So I want to get hit in the mouth in the non-conference. So I know what I'm getting into when I got to play at Charleston or Wilmington, you know, some of those type of teams. I think a lot of guys win big in the non-conference and then they get hit in the mouth come their league and they ain't really ready for that. So, you know, you're not fooling your fan base.
No,
you know what I mean? Like if you're a ACC or Big East or A-10, you better be ready for those battles. And I think we would provide a good test for a lot of those teams to get them ready for that.
And like you're not, when you're scheduling those lower level, it doesn't really help you when the numbers come like tournament time, because you're not getting that strength of schedule or those, you know, quad one wins, quad two, whatever the case may be, if you're only playing like the lower level Division I teams.
You hope so. The one thing that's a hurt a program like ours the last couple of years is they call it the net. In the net rewards efficiency ratings, so on both offense and defense. So what that means is, like, if you win games by 20, 30 points, you're getting more your net rating is going up higher than when you used to just beat a good team in a close game. So, you know, it's fairly shameful that the NCAA basketball committee, led by Dan Gavitt, has in a lot of ways tried to hurt the good mid-majors. It's shameful. And I've known Dan, a good guy, but like what they've done with the scheduling and the NIT, it's shameful.
It's crazy. Like, real quick, Ruta, like that A-10 is probably the top mid major, and they're still only getting one team into the tournament, even though they had like 3-4 teams with 20 plus wins. It's just wild that's how it's worked out.
Yeah, I'd say like the powers that be, they're not very transparent when they answer the questions, which, you know, like, just be transparent. And then it's that's shameful if the A-10's only getting one team in. Just shameful.
100%. A team like George Mason, you know, where they're killing the whole year, right? Number one. Pretty sure they're number one in the A-10.
They tied for first show.
With BTU, yep. So, and then the fact, you know, they made the NIT, but still, like, they probably should have made the tournament. And, you know, you're bringing up a good point. You know, you're talking about the NCAA committee, because we had kind of talked about this before, Coach, with, like, maybe mid-major players or the absence of mid-major teams in the NCAA, like, March Madness, right? And maybe blaming it on NIL and the teams and colleges not being able to pay their players as much. But really, like, there's a whole nother aspect to it where it's like the committee is not rewarding these mid-major teams because of the net rating. So that's like already putting them at the disadvantage along with the NIL. Interesting points for sure.
Yeah, why would you not have more coaches or former coaches on those committees? I mean, no disrespect, if you know, like if you're watching like The Voice, right? They actually have singers that rate and grade the performance. That would make sense to me. Why would you have people
never played basketball, never
played or coach, you know, like, you know, that's an interesting way of doing that, right? We saw what's can happen in our country when you do that. If you put people in charge of the country that don't have any experience, it usually doesn't lead to smooth sailing, you know?
Well said, Coach. Well said. And talk about you. I want to bring the conversation back over to you real quick, because we're talking about, you know, experience and coaching, and you came into Towson when you took over in 2011. You had a couple of different stops, like whether it be assistant coaches or even head coaching stop as well. But you took over a program that had 15 straight losing seasons before you got there. And I just want to know, let's start it off first with this. What was the first thing you focused on, like first week at Towson? This is what we need to fix. Let's start there, and then we kind of move through.
That's a while ago, though.
Yeah, it is a while ago. You know what? In anything you do with this, talent is a baseline. So you've got to have some talent. You got to have some ingredients. So obviously, upgrading the talent was number one. I think when you do get a job, I like to say it's like going to Outback Steakhouse and getting a blooming onion. You just keep peeling back. The problem, it's like a blooming onion of shit. You just keep peeling it back and. And you're like, oh, they didn't tell me this, they didn't tell me that. So I knew what I didn't know. This was my first job. And I don't think it had a lot to do with the coaching. The infrastructure was not here. Thankfully, it's improved a lot. But for us, the biggest thing was like, hey, we've got to change habits, how we do everything. Everyone uses the buzzword culture. I've always said if we have good habits, then our culture is pretty good.
100%. I mean, you know, just hearing you talk, Coach, and listen to other interviews, I mean, you're an ambitious person yourself. Obviously, you put a lot of time and effort and work into this basketball stuff, right? And I actually knew a player that played for you, Nick Timberlake. And he
a
was
really a good player. A really good player.
Yeah, he was. He was a worker himself. He was in the gym a lot. So I want to kind of sidestep this convo and just hear your thoughts about Nick. Maybe kind of I know he transferred to Kansas for his last year, but he had a great career at Towson. And, you know, how'd you kind of recruited him and stuff?
Yeah. He's a future Hall of Famer here at Towson. One of my all time favorite guys. So Nick was with us for 5 years, graduated in 4, and then went to Kansas. And honestly, at that time we had $0 to pay players. So he made a good decision at that point. But I mean, this is a guy, I went up and saw him his last game in high school. We had heard about him. They got beat by about 100 points and he didn't have a great game, but I loved how edgy he was. He got into like 3 little mini skirmishes during the game. His dad was a great player. And I loved how strong, athletic he was. So we took a chance on him. Now, I think our staff did a really good job of putting him on a road to have success, but he did the work. He had an insatiable work ethic. I tell people all the time, he shot, I want to say it was 29% from 3 his freshman year. And then his senior year with us, he shot 49 from 3 in conference. So he was a religious worker. And that's what it takes.
It's funny about Nick too. Like he was a shooter in high school. I felt like, I mean, you know, I was a high schooler back in the day. And like you said, it was a long time ago, but I do remember, you know, watching Nick play, and he used to get to his midi game and he was athletic and he used to shoot the 3, but you know, he had to work on his game more when he got to Division I level. And you love hearing stuff like that. Cause he was, like I said, great player for you guys. And, you know, had a great year at Kansas.
Yeah. Tremendous player for us. He was, back to back first team all conference, helped us win our first conference championship. Yeah, he's a great player.
It's crazy, Rudy, because Coach was talking about earlier, like imploring his guys to like during the off seasons, like have fun, do what you want to do in the off season. And some coaches, like if Nick Timberlake, I don't know his game, but if he shot 29% first year, it might be like, let's not shoot threes as much, or, you know, let's get to the other parts of your game. But like, credit to you, because you're imploring him, like, keep shooting, let's work on that 3-point shot. And then now he's a high major player shooting 49% from three. Is crazy.
Yeah, I think, like I said, you don't want to discourage guys in the spring and summer of how to really improve their game and their bodies, right? How they move, how they look, how they feel, like that all helps breed confidence. When we get to the fall now, yeah, you've got to hone in on roles and execution. But I know, like, if we're talking about defense and whatever we're going to do defensively next year, the bigger, stronger, faster, and the better we move is going to help us defensively. So the more we can get guys bought into nutrition and strength and conditioning this time of year, that's going to help our defense later on.
100%. One thing that I know you must be proud of, Coach, is when we were doing research for the questions, I don't remember the exact number, but you've had like 3 or 4 All-Americans on that you've coached during your time at Towson. And you've had, I think, a number of different all-conference players too. So to me, that just shows that you're developing these players the right way. Like, you're bringing them in freshman year and then you're developing them to this All-American status, all-conference status, to where now they can maybe move on and start getting paid to play basketball, you know, and you're seeing the development just throughout their career, you know, with you.
No, that's, you know, look, you're paid to win games, right? But make no mistake, the most gratifying part of the job is the relationships you're afforded the opportunity to make with players and staff.
That's we hear that just with, you know, us playing D3 basketball. We're going to talk about this shortly. You play D3 basketball yourself, but, you know, that's been the joy of I just finished up my career, and I've, you know, truly love the connections and truly love the people that I met playing basketball here at Utica. Like, I met KJ, you know, playing here at Utica, but he doesn't even go here. He goes to Alfred University, which is same school in the conference, and I would have never gotten that connection if I didn't come here. So college basketball.
You missed that, you know, like that's the biggest thing when it ends, right? You miss the locker room and hanging out, the daily competition, that's the stuff that kind of sticks with you forever. That's just kind of the sanctity of being a part of a team and a unit.
100%. That's what makes basketball cool. It's not an individual sport. It's really a team sport, and you really need all, you know, 1 through 15, 12, 20, whatever it is. I want to talk about this one, you know, you played for Tufts, and you actually grew up in Medford. And if I'm not mistaken, Tufts is in Medford.
Yep.
And, you know, you had one season, 650 assists, or no, for a career, excuse me, career, you had 650 assists, which, you know, that means you were diming people up and all that good stuff. So what do you remember about your playing days, and how do you feel like your own playing style, like as a player, influence you as a coach today?
Yeah, I think my edginess and intensity comes from being a self-made player and just trying to work for it. You know, I don't play anymore. It's been a long time, but you certainly, you know, when you connect with a former teammate and stuff, you do think about those things and the cool piece of being able to compete, right? I mean, that's a big, big part of it, you know. You know, the coaching journey, it ties into it. You know, I'm fortunate enough to be around basketball for a long time. And while the game and some of the things around it have certainly changed, when you can get on the court for practice or the walkthrough or the game preparation or the nerves before the game or the actual in-game tight game stuff, like, you know, that's the stuff as I get a little bit older, I start thinking about when you don't get to do that, I'd be missing a big piece. Like last night I was watching, trying to catch up on this Celtic City documentary on HBO Max, and just really well done. But a lot of those things touch home to me, because especially in the Celtics Lakers era and stuff, and then being in college then was it just really resonates.
I'm sure it must have been fun when the Celtics were playing the finals. I know you guys are going to the sports bars and watching it, Coach.
I never heard of those. Where are those bars?
Coach, I don't mean to age you, but what years were you in school? I'm just curious about like what the NESCAC was like and stuff like that.
Yeah, so I graduated in 92, and then I coached at Tufts to 95. And what was tricky back then was when I played, we weren't allowed to go to the NCAA tournament. The presidents didn't let us do that. My last year coaching at Tufts was the first time we were allowed to go to the NCAA tournament. We made it, so that was a pretty cool thing. But so we got chipped on. I got chipped on. They used to put us under like a 24 game limit. Now they get to play like 30, you know, so some of my numbers would be a lot higher if we got the same game opportunity.
This is gonna be the last thing we talk about before we take a quick break, but I'm curious, like a lot of coaching, it, like former players get into that division of coaching usually. So like if you play Division III, you're going to stay in Division III. That's just like your social capital. You know the people in that division, but you managed to jump from D3 and then into D1, and you kind of like stood in Division I, and now you've had a great career. So I'm just curious, as two Division III players maybe trying to, you know, get to that level, what were some of the things that you were focusing on, and how'd you get a stamp in the Division I game?
Yeah, great. That's a really intelligent point. It's a lot of good fortune, you know. I'd go back to what I told you earlier, trying not to turn down a basketball opportunity. You know, for me, I did, like, this is what you guys are doing is really smart. And I always used to work. Tufts was a good school, and I used to – my internship was working for three summers, you know, 8 to 10 weeks of basketball camps. Especially in the area, that was probably didn't seem as fruitful as the guy working at Smith Barney or Wells Fargo back then. But that was kind of my thing, and a lot of those jobs I had as assistants were I got because of connections I made working camps and stuff back then. Where like maybe an assistant coach ran the camp, and I worked for him, and then eventually he became a head coach, and you know what I mean. I had change jobs and all that stuff, and but yeah, that's it. It's certainly most of my guys on staff have some small college background. I kind of like that personally, so I think you need to, you know, the love of the game, you truly have that, and two, when you're coaching at that level, there's a lot of things you've got to do that aren't just given to you.
The Division III connection is definitely strong, but stay with us while we take a quick break. All right, we are back with Coach Gary on the Not Even D2 pod. So earlier we were talking about Tyler Tejada, and for those who don't know, he was the CAA Player of the Year this past year. He averaged like 17-4, was the first true sophomore to win Player of the Year in the conference since like the late 90s or something, which is crazy, but I'm just curious, like, if you could talk about coaching him, his strength, stuff like that, but also how you were able to get him to stay another year, because, like, we were talking about earlier, transfer portal, like, if a mid-major player has a great year, they can make a lot of money going, like, high major or something like that. So just talk about your relationship with him and getting him to stay.
Well, one, really excited about where he's going to be able to get to. You know, I think he's an NBA player. And that's the goal, is to get him there over the next 12 months. And he has attacked this spring as well as anyone I've seen attack a spring in my 32 years of doing this. The second piece is, you know, we're doing a lot more for him and Dylan than maybe I thought we were capable of doing initially. So I'm really appreciative of my administration's efforts and that. And then the third thing about Tyler is he's really in this for the right reasons. Has an unbelievable family, especially his mom, great dad. Is a balanced kid. I think like he understands that while he could be on any roster in the country, the fact that he's in the top 1% in usage rate here is something that is going to set him up to, mm-hmm. to reach his professional goals. So, you know, he knows the areas he's got to get better at. And, you know, he's our staff, especially Parfait on my staff, has done a great job with him. And then we're excited to see what he can get to. He deserves the accolades he received and a lot of the hype that he's on the radar. I mean, there'll be a lot of NBA people coming through here next year. And I think he's ready for that responsibility and where he can take us to.
100%. It's the definitely watching like Tyler's film. Like, it's kind of crazy because like on the court, or at least on the film, he looks pretty big, but he's like pulling up for three and during in like transition. And like, he has a little bit of, he has a lot of skill to his game. So it just shows, like I said, the development of you and your staff, just, you know, building him up from, you know, freshman year, now last year to another year with you guys next year.
He's really changed his body. Last Friday, he was at 230 pounds and he's really moving better. Mm-hmm. And we're spending a lot of time. I mean, he's going to handle the ball a lot more, really as like a point. And the same thing with Williamson. Williamson shot the ball so well that we're spending a lot of time on getting him off of some screens because of how, like, so, you know, the there's things in both those guys' games that complement one another that we've got to continue to do a better job of emphasizing.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And like I said, he's 6'9", really big, a lot of skill. And that's kind of where the NBA is trending towards, like, you know, skilled players that can kind of do it all. Just great overall, good basketball players that can do anything on the court, right? Guard, pass, dribble, shoot.
Yeah, you need that. And I think the one thing that both Williamson and Tejada understand for us is that they're on those radars now because of the success they've been able to have at Towson. They don't need to be somewhere else to be on that radar. They're on the radar. We showed them from a half dozen NBA teams basically a report card on them. So as I told them, we're giving you the answers to the test. Now we've got to get better at those things. People were at games last year, especially the second half of the season. Now they're telling us they're going to be at practices early and often. Mm. So they're coming in to critique, right? And a lot of times, I think a lot of these college guys have to understand that. And I was told this to Tyler. Tyler's a big New York Knicks fan. That's one of his few weaknesses.
What? He's a Knicks, how's that a weakness?
That's a big weakness. I agree.
Instead of being a Celtics fan, he's a Knicks fan. But as we've explained to him, right, when the Knicks are looking at players, they're looking for players that today can help Brunson and Cat, because those are superstars. We were with the Celtics, right? It's Tatum and Brown. So most of the league is filled with guys that can help those superstar guys.
Yeah, they're not looking for number one options anymore. Like, you got to be able to play off of it, do everything else on the court.
But here's the thing, right? You don't need to be in the SEC at Kentucky per se, standing in the corner as the third option. You can do that in the NBA where they're paying you $8-12 million a year. That's a good time to do it. Here, let's rock with you. Let's, you know, you're going to have the ball. You're going to make the magic happen here, and that's going to set you up down the line. I mean, the bottom line is the NBA is going to find you whether you're at Kentucky, you're at Utica, you're at.
I don't know about all that.
They got an army. They have an army of scouts and resources. So, like I said, the league is filled with guys that weren't at power four or five colleges have had great, great success. And we think we got a couple guys that are going to be able to achieve that.
I mean, but you're speaking to that, right? Because you're saying that you have a half dozen teams looking at Tyler's film and being like, hey, this
more
is
than that,
that's what I'm saying. You have like these teams looking at his game being like, hey, this is what he needs to work on, but he's a real prospect. And how many mid-major teams can really say that they have that type of, they have the type of players to like even offer them that type of experience, if that makes sense.
I hope not. We got two of them, so I'm getting, you guys are getting me excited. I hope none. That's the, you know, that's the goal. That's the plan. That's the wish.
100%, coach. And, you know, love the what you're talking about, just with you're telling guys like, hey, you come over here, you could go sit in the corner and, you know, shoot, be a role player, shoot spot up threes. And there's nothing wrong with that. But maybe if you come here to Towson, you're going to have to work hard for it. But the ball is going to be in your hands and you're going to be making the plays. It's going to help you develop as a player. Like, that's what we're going to see. Like, we're going to see a trend of players being like, okay, I feel like I'd much rather do the latter. I'd much rather, you know, get the ball in my hands, develop as a player, as a person, be in a program that I actually enjoy being a part of. Because that's another thing. That's another part of it, too. If the player can really connect with the coaches and the staff and the other teammates, that's going to make them more willing to stay.
Yeah, all that glitters is not always all that's gold, right? And a lot of these guys, you know, like I said, we're able to do some things for guys, but a lot of these kids are going to make moves supposedly going up. I hope it's worth it for them financially in the short term, because the long term ramifications of that, if they don't play well, it's absolutely going to affect them financially.
100%. I mean, you know, you're taking that gamble on yourself, right? Because there's a lot large conversation talking about, like, oh, like, you know, these Division I high major players, they're getting paid, so what's the point of, you know, going to the – it sounds so crazy to say, but what's the point of going to the NBA, because you're already making so much money in college? Like, the players don't have the same and this is what reporters and maybe other, you know, players that are out of the game now, like, they're basically saying, like, what's the ambition to go to the NBA now? Like, you're making all this money in college, right? But really, it's never been about the money. It's been about, like, providing yourself with, like, a good situation in order to make generational wealth with going to the NBA or with, like, you know, having a real, really long overseas career. So, you know, you're bringing up a lot of good points, coach. And, you know, you're maintaining consistency even with the roster over turnover that's common in college basketball today. You know, with, like I mentioned earlier, 20 games for 4 straight seasons, like, that's not a little bag. That's a really amazing accomplishment, especially in Division I college basketball. So what would be just your insight, perspective, advice to coaches that are trying to reach the same level of success?
Well, I don't want to give up too much of that, because we'd like to try to maintain that. I think some of it, you've got to have some good fortune, you know, but it's also having, I think, the right not just – some talent, but the right type of human beings on both your roster and in your staff that, you know, they have some mutual respect. They share similar values. Hopefully, like I said, we're forming good habits with them, and then they appreciate the investment we're making in them.
Yeah. I like that, coach, especially in, like, Division One. I feel a lot of teams aren't really focused on, you know, the type of people they're bringing instead of, like, the best basketball players. So I appreciate that. And you can see, like, and I was saying this in a previous episode, like, the way that mid and low majors can distinguish themselves in today's college basketball is creating that culture where you have 4-year guys, and it's not like, oh, transfer portal kid throughout the roster. And you're seeing it with your team. I mean, 20 plus wins in the CAA is big time. But we usually like ending episodes with, like, a bigger than basketball question, and you're the perfect guy to talk about something bigger than basketball. So you started this autism awareness program, and I want to hear a lot about it. So I'll just give a little context. You can fill in the spots I missed. But so your son Owen was diagnosed with autism at a young age, and you, when you got to this platform of a head coach, you inspired, you know, like, other coaches to participate in the program. I believe it's called Coaches Partner Forward, correct? Yeah. So you partnered with another coach, and that has since developed. But basically, you're just shedding light on autism and allowing players, all people, to deserve the same type of equity and respect because they have autism as well. So I'm kind of curious, like, how this started, how you getting other coaches to support it, because I'm seeing, like, Tom Izzo, Coach K, like, all the big name coaches, they're supporting the program that you started. So just talk about all that.
Sure, appreciate that. You know, we started a little bit over a decade ago. We just really tried to come up with a clever idea of how many linear TV games were there on national TV on a weekend in February. And I think it, you know, at that time when we first started, it was like 35 games. Now it's triple that over the week or quadruple that, you know. Mm-hmm. And we sent all the coaches the puzzle piece, Autism Speaks. It's like the most recognizable symbol of autism, you know, and we got the coaches to wear that on their lapel. Now we've got some different wardrobes these days, so it becomes a little bit trickier, but with the help of Autism Speaks and then the National Association of Basketball Coaches and the Women's Basketball Coaches Association, Colleen Mullen from Albany has spearheaded from her end. We've just tried to have a weekend or a week where we bring some awareness to it. You know, hopefully at some point, maybe it's an acceptance weekend, you know, where we're accepting of, you know, people that are on the autism spectrum. You know, it's a something that in our household, we have to deal with every day. My wife, Kristen, obviously has been a champion in this. But we just tried to use our platform. You know, for me, the impetus behind it was autism's the world's largest developmental disorder. You know, the prevalency rates are crazy. It's like mm-hmm. 1 in 32 boys right now. And the tough piece is to for a family to get the services they need is like roughly like $40,000-$50,000 a year. So it's heartbreaking to think how many families aren't able to get that. So that's really why we said, hey, what can we do to just try to bring some awareness to it? So I don't want to take more credit than it's deserved. I think the next piece is we've had this clever little idea. How do we make it better? Well, we've probably been a little bit stagnant in that. You know, there's a lot of ideas being floated that require money or television to get behind it, but that would kind of be the next kind of the next venture.
I respect that a lot. And I mean, are you the person that's kind of trying to get TVs and media deals involved, or do you have like a committee?
Not enough. We've had this is probably now about 3 years. We've had some conversations with it, and I'm not savvy or well versed enough in that market to how to take that to production. But that's really what we need. I think, you know, I think if we could get some more stuff going that way, would be pretty cool.
We got to get the CIA to get on board and start getting some deals signed for those games to be like on TV and maybe like a special on SportsCenter, stuff, something like that.
Yeah. Could we get, you know, could we have like they have with Coaches versus Cancer, you know, a non-conference game, or, you know, the NBA's done some good stuff. Could we get college football involved? You know, I think it's a pretty open market, but I do think it's what I have seen over the last few years is it really, if you talk to almost anyone now, they know someone in their family or a friend that has someone who's on the autism spectrum. And that's been affected by it in different ways.
Yeah, 100%. Shout out to you, Coach. That's big time. But before we get you out of here, we want to end this episode with a rapid fire and start a five edition. So let us know you're ready for rapid fire.
I'm always ready. Right? James Brown, the godfather of soul, said, if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's go. Let's hit
it's number three. Number three you gave me.
It's a great quote to live by, Coach. Definitely. First rapid fire question I got for you. Are the powder blue Towson University basketball jerseys the best jerseys in college basketball right now?
100%. Hail to Under Armour.
Nah, those jerseys are definitely clean, Coach. I had to ask.
Those are fire, man. Those are fire.
I love it.
They are. Next rapid fire question I got for you. CAA arena that you love to play in besides the SECU?
Definitely Trask Coliseum down in Wilmington, North Carolina. The students always welcome me with open arms.
then wait, are you the type of coach to give a look to the crowd or something like that, or after a big play by your players or something? Or
occasionally we exchange pleasantries.
love it. Next rapid fire question. What's one thing that you think people get wrong about mid-major basketball?
Just the investment and the time commitment that it takes to have success.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a fact, and that's another conversation we could have, but let's end this episode with a starting five edition. So if you're a coach assembling a lineup, who's your lineup going to be? And this edition is going to be the hardest working players that you've coached.
Wow. Well, Tejada's in there for sure.
Give me like position two. So Tejada at what position?
A wing. Okay. Say three spot.
Okay.
Timberlake. Brian Fobbs is a great player.
Where's Timberlake playing?
Timberlake's at the two. Actually, let's slide Tejada to the four.
Okay.
Timberlake at the two. Brian Fobbs at the three, who's over in the EuroLeague. I might give you two. Dylan Williamson's my point guard right now. And then we're gonna go small. And to date, not that these two guys can't catch him, but to date, Jarrell Bannerman, who played in the NBA for us at the five.
From Georgetown, right?
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. He is a really good player. But it's a good lineup. Those are all like some of your top players, and they're all hard workers.
And then we got to have Charlie Thompson too.
Charlie Thompson,
my favorite guy at the forward spot. The super six we're going with.
One question, Coach: if you had to exchange a Division III player that you coached or coached against, who would it be in that lineup?
So you guys, you're a little bit young, but there was a kid in this day and age, he would have never lasted in Division III. He'd have been all league and our league. Mike Nogello from Williams College.
Mike Nogello.
Nogello, 6'7", just basketball player, All-American, ridiculous talent.
Yeah, I mean, that's tough, and that's a good lineup you just gave us, but that's going to do it for another episode of Not Even D2. We definitely appreciate you getting on, gave us a lot of good advice, really good coach, and we're hoping the best for the rest of Pascari's career.
Thanks, guys. You have a great day. Keep up the good work.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Not Even D2.
Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, Twitter. That's the best way to support the channel.
And all episodes released on iHeartRadio, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's going to do it. And we'll see you next week on Thursday.
Yo, bro, that was a fire episode.
OD.